Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
There's a lot of smoke out there when it comes to universities saying they're planning for classes and athletic departments saying they're planning to have a college football season, NBA teams saying we're planning to be back. A lot of language you got to sort through. Dan Lust is a sports litigator. You can find him on Twitter at SportsLawLust. He's the best in the biz. I love having him on. You've heard him nationally on ESPN, CBS, and Fox Sports. He's joining us now. I want to sort through this. Man, this must be an interesting time for you.
It is. It's funny. While kind of sports are on hiatus, everyone's kind of wondering when sports can come back. And really the biggest hurdle, as I'm sure, John, you and I will get into, is this legal question. At what point is it safe for sports to return, and what leagues and teams can do to make it safe? And that's really when you kind of need some legal advice.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about, you know, everybody wants to play games. These teams want to play games. Television wants them to play games. They've talked about playing without fans, but maybe letting some fans in. What liability will these organizations have if they allow fans in and maybe there's an outbreak that stems from an event? Do they have any liability? Do they have to have people sign waivers? What do you see coming?
So the question is always, and I remember, John, we spoke about this Mason Rudolph lawsuit way back when there was a defamation case. The question in the law is, right, you can always sue someone for something. The question is really whether you can win at the end of the day. So, do the teams and leagues have liability? That's the question that's going to be at the heart of a lawsuit. I don't think, you know, there's no way that a team or a league, just like we're seeing in the Houston Astros situation, you can't avoid lawsuits. You know, you just have to be able to defend them. So when it comes to whether a team or a league will, you know, get hit and lose a lawsuit, it really comes down to something called causation. This is something called negligence. You guys have heard the term. You have to show that someone's careless acts caused you to suffer some type of harm. So, you know, at a first point, you have to show that the teams and leagues acted careless in some type of way, right? Maybe reopening too soon, maybe not having social distancing within the seats at a given arena. But at the end of the day, you'll have to, as a plaintiff in the suit, whether you're, you know, an employee or a fan, you'd have to show that the team's carelessness was the director, what we call the proximate cause of your harm. And that really, John, is a really impossible task because you have to rule out all other potential sources of infection. So could you get hit with a lawsuit? Sure. But that causation element is going to be very hard to show.
Dan Lust is our guest, sports litigator. Dan, the NBA franchises, NBA players, unlike some of the other sports, have guaranteed contracts. If they don't play a season, are the NBA teams on the hook for those contracts, or is there no revenue, no contract?
So that's we'll say the million-dollar, if not billion-dollar question, John. it's getting close there. So the NBA right now, some teams are between 63 and 66 games. So players have been paid up through that point and a little bit after that. They were paid up until, I believe, through April. But now we're at this point, we're in kind of this middle ground, this gray area, whether or not the season is going to be canceled. The NBA actually has something called a force majeure clause in their collective bargaining agreement. And it basically says if there's a triggering event that could cancel the season and it could wipe out remaining salary obligations owed to players. So here, sometimes you don't really know if you have a triggering event. It's not so clear. Here, the NBA attorneys actually spelled out that an epidemic, which is one level of what we're dealing with here, a pandemic, that would count as something that could cancel the season and wipe out player salaries. So, it's funny, John, I've been kind of watching this for the past couple months, it's not so legalese, but the NBA owners had 60 days to trigger that clause and cancel the season. It wasn't the players that had that ability to cancel. It was only the owners. So that actually just coincidentally, John, was set to expire on Sunday, on Mother's Day. So, Monday morning I woke up and, the world was still here. So I'm thinking, okay, I guess they didn't cancel the season. I guess they're getting pretty close. And then Woj dropped the Woj bomb and said, you know what? They actually just extended that deadline to cancel by another 60 days. So I thought no news was good news, and I actually had a tweet ready to go. And then, you know what? I had to delete that because now you're just extending that deadline out another 60 days so you could still, in theory, have a canceled season.
Dan Lust with us, sports litigator. You can find him on Twitter at SportsLawLust. I want to talk about the Vanessa Bryant lawsuit. She recently filed a claim against the deputies who took photos of the crash site. Was that just a sort of a, you know, her taking a moral stand there, her wanting to call attention to it? What do you think the objective there of that lawsuit is?
So I had seen this a couple months ago. I guess for people that aren't aware, LA County deputies were at the scene at the crash site. John, I'm not in law enforcement. I've seen people take pictures or photographs at various accident scenes when I'm there. But you know, when it comes to a helicopter crash of this magnitude, you don't really know what proper protocol is. But it turns out that Vanessa Bryant went to the LA County PD, deputy's office, deputy sheriff, and said, I want this to be handled very delicately. I don't want photos getting out there. That's my, I'm paraphrasing, but that's my worst fear that would happen. And as I guess is what happened here is that deputy trainees actually took photos at the crash site. And the reason we know about this, John, it kind of makes you sick to your stomach, but an anonymous tip came in from a local bar that one of these deputies was showing photos of the crash site off at a bar just to random patrons. So that made its way back to Vanessa Bryant. Her attorney announced that she was thinking about filing this lawsuit. And now she's filed a claim, which is the precursor to actually a full lawsuit. And one of these claims that she's going to be alleging, or plans to be alleging, is called the invasion of her right to privacy. Apparently she was given a representation that something like this wouldn't happen. And under the LA County Deputy Sheriff's watch, this is something that she's alleging did happen.
Dan Lust with us, sports attorney. Dan, there are a lot of parents out there asking me youth sports questions. And I know the governor in the state of Oregon, the governor's office, told me that they are working on some guidelines. In the meantime, though, parents have paid some club fees that are, range in the thousands of dollars. And they're wondering, all right, if there isn't a season, will I get a refund? They're not getting good answers. What would you tell somebody who's paid a couple thousand dollars, doesn't know if the youth sports season's going to happen?
Well, John, I saw your piece on that this morning, and I think it's a good question. I mean, we're here talking about the pros, and you and I are laughing about the million-billion-dollar question. But across the country, there is youth sports in the aggregate. Maybe you get to the millions. Maybe you get a little higher than that. It really does come down to maybe the second question you asked me about something called force majeure. You'll have to kind of look, and I have attorneys. I have a lot of attorneys that follow me on Twitter, and everyone's kind of joking. Nobody knew what force majeure was until this happened. Mm-hmm. Sometimes in various sports, right, the NBA has a very clear force majeure contract, or force majeure clause. It's actually called that. But in different contexts, you're going to see it be called different things, be it something called like an act of God. Major League Baseball has something called a national emergency clause. The different variations of this, and even if there's something that doesn't say it really in bright line terms, right, act of God, national emergency, something just called a general frustration of purpose of the contract. You can have a scenario for youth sports, and you have to look at the particular contract and see what that language says. But if a parent, for whatever reason, season can't be played and they've already given $1,500 and there's something that frustrates the purpose of the contract, be it a pandemic or, God forbid, a terrorist event or something like the Hurricane Katrina, there's going to be an argument that a lawyer like myself would make to say, hey, I deserve this money back because the reason I gave you it is now frustrated. The whole frustration of purpose, that doctrine would seemingly apply here. So, I would tell anyone that the particulars of their contract are going to be important, but it's definitely a colorable argument you could make if there's actually going to be no season.
I think moving forward, we're probably going to see language in contracts that is specific to a pandemic. Is it your understanding, Dan, that specific language has to be in there, that not just, hey, it's just more difficult to do business, but it's impossible to do business because of a pandemic?
So you're going to laugh, John. I mean, I've really been following this very closely. So the NBA is the only sports entity. I mean, a lot of these contracts are private, so we're not going to see them with the different TV deals and arena deals. But the ones that are public, The NBA is the only one I've seen that has used anything that resembles a term like disease, like it says epidemic. So we know this applies. Baseball, national emergency, pretty close. Somebody had posted it. I found a copy of it. Alabama football, they have a number of non-conference games. So they have their own version of a force majeure clause. Theirs doesn't say epidemic, doesn't say pandemic. But what it does cover for, John, is a rebellion. So if a rebellion happens in the state of Alabama, prevents non-conference games, force majeure applies. So, you know, it's a fun kind of just legal anecdote. You know, you can prepare for the unexpected, right? What's more possible in this day and age, a pandemic or a rebellion? I mean, I'm not sure, but it just goes to say Alabama's going to have a trickier issue here because, you know, come the fall, right, maybe we're just going to start having a reopening, even though the pandemic is still going on. So come the fall, right, September, October, November, it's not really clear if Alabama's force majeure is going to apply because they don't have the word epidemic in there. So moving forward, I think it's probably you're rather safe than sorry and just be over-inclusive. Put in, you know, pandemic and also put in rebellion.
We're talking to Dan Lust, sports litigator. Dan, let me ask you a question about college athletics. What would be the significance of colleges having athletes signing waivers to participate? Are they enforceable given that the athletes are on scholarship and might be compelled to sign those?
It's a tough question. I mean, the reason this is coming up, this content, you know, conversation about waivers is this past Saturday, the UFC went forward and there were reports that, you know, they all fighters had to sign a waiver, a full assumption of the risk that they, you know, knew the risks of COVID-19, and that if, to the extent that they contract it, they wouldn't go after UFC. You know, and secondarily, you know, in order to get paid, they had to sign that. So it's a question of whether or not the fighters in that instance as professionals had the right bargaining power to refuse to sign it. And from that standpoint, I mean, in order for them to get paid, they had to sign it, but there's no real gun to their head. So that's kind of one side of the coin. When it comes to, you know, college athletes, they don't really have any bargaining power. It's not like they can kind of wait for, you know, the next fight to go on UFC 250, UFC 251. You know, if they don't sign a waiver to play in the fall or the winter, I mean, they're missing an entire year of eligibility, you know, conceivably. So the bargaining power and, you know, we'll say the leverage is a little bit different for college athletes. But that being said, that's the big hurdle, right? How are we going to come back and play? I'm sure pro sports teams want to play, but it's really the players and the college athletes, you know, those are the guys that are really feeling that risk. So I tend to think, John, that waivers are going to be part of that conversation with the unions at the college level if they're not already. But, you know, as you can imagine, no one wants to sign their life away, and especially from a public policy perspective, the law isn't going to look upon something so favorably if this person doesn't really have any options on their end, which is a little bit more in play when you get to the college level versus the professional level.
I think like more emphasis or more focus than ever has been on sort of your portion of the world. And I know we talked about that off the front, but what is your timeline been like? What kind of requests are you getting to appear, and are you getting the same questions everywhere, or does it range depending on, you know, if you're talking to a radio station in the South in SEC country, is it all about college football?
Well, it's funny. I mean, a lot of my conversations, I mean, I even see it today. Florida, there's certain states around the country. I mean, I'm from New York, which is a little more conservative when it comes to reopening. We're on the opposite end of that spectrum. Florida, you know, is on the other side. Florida today, I'm seeing, you know, not only are they fully, you know, they've declared professional wrestling as an essential business, right? You know, UFC is an essential business. And now they're going one step further, doubling down and trying to recruit the teams and states that are being shut down. So, John, I imagine you saw this. L.A. County said they're going to shut down, or they're about to shut down for 3 months. So that really puts the squash on any potential Lakers home game. So those guys have to find a different arena. And now Florida, Ron DeSantis is getting out today, just a couple hours ago, and recruiting all of these, you know, these professional teams without a home to come play in Florida. So my interviews kind of across the country are really dependent on the market. But it's funny, when you get to these states that are very much for reopening, it's kind of more of a question of how can we problem solve versus, you know, how can we avoid the liability?
It's really interesting to me, too, because there's just money's at the heart of this. And you've got television, you've got college football programs, NFL seasons, you've got the NBA. Is the NBA just Were they further evolved, or did they have their eye internationally? Do you get the sense with them having epidemic as part of their force majeure clause that they were just a little more worldly?
I haven't seen it. I just haven't seen epidemic used anywhere else. It's not that, fathomable. We had a SARS outbreak, not so long ago. I know it didn't end up amounting to so much, but there was an Ebola scare, not so long ago. The only real evidence we have of this really impacting at any level domestic sports is, almost quite literally 100 years ago with the Spanish flu epidemic that, of all sports, it actually impacted Major League Baseball. I know there's some pictures floating around on Twitter and the internet. I'm happy to share them of players playing baseball in masks going way back 100 years. I don't know how basketball came up with it. It was probably good. I'll tell you the flip side, though, John. The flip side to it being in the CBA, you obviously prepare for the unexpected. That's great. But for these other leagues, be it Major League Baseball, football, hockey, they don't have such a clear force majeure clause. And the reason I bring this up here, it's actually, an interesting point. For the NBA, for them to cancel the season under their version of force majeure, in order to do that, they actually have to cancel and terminate the actual collective bargaining agreement. So that's part and parcel with an NBA cancellation. The CBA goes with it. Now, could they tomorrow, John, contract around that? Sure, they could and just, preserve the CBA and make an amendment. But we don't know what this next territory of sports is going to look like. We know the salary cap is likely going to drop because, as Woj reported, NBA teams, their revenue is made up of 40% of ticket sales. So we know the salary cap's going to drop. We know the money's going to be different. Maybe it's in the league's interest to renegotiate the CBA under these type of, uncharted territories. But that's because, I guess, the NBA foresaw this. Now they have to deal with this looming issue of canceling the CBA, where it's not really necessarily on the table for the other sports.
Baseball's got what could potentially be an ugly situation. The players are prepared to play the season. They've got some conditions. They don't want to take less money than they already agreed to. They had a reduction already. How ugly is this going to get with Major League Baseball and the Players Association?
What gets me a little concerned on the baseball end, they already came to terms on a deal March 26th. So they agreed to certain reductions. We weren't made privy to all the various details. I'm sure that'll come out. But at some point on March 26th, it was really 2 weeks into what we're dealing with now. They cut a deal. Major League Baseball and the players, they decided to cut a deal. Now, obviously, we're, a month and a half later, things are a little bit different, right? It doesn't really look like we have such a clear exit strategy to this pandemic, and everyone's a little worried about liability. So Major League Baseball is now essentially coming back to the table and asking players to renegotiate a deal that they've negotiated not so long ago. The argument from Major League Baseball is, we don't know what our revenue is going to look like. We're also losing a giant chunk of our revenue from ticket sales. So we'd also, what they're proposing, it's kind of interesting. All sports, John, other than baseball, all major sports have some form of revenue sharing amongst the league and the Players Association. Baseball, for whatever reason, just doesn't do that. Player salaries are not tied to what the overall revenue of the league is. It's just not how it works. But what Major League Baseball is proposing is, instead of kind of a prorated version of your salary, let's actually tie it to how much money is coming into the league via TV deals or whatever else they can get outside of fan ticket revenue. So it's kind of unheard of. It's unheard of, at least in baseball. It's just not how they operate. But, we'll see what goes on. I mean, it's going to be a rough process because, John, at the end of the day, these player associations now have to open up the books, right, and figure out where all the money's coming from. If they're willing to agree to a revenue-type deal in fairness to the league, if they're willing to take a pay cut. And to the player's point, they already negotiated this deal. So, playing devil's advocate, they already negotiated it, and Major League Baseball is not happy with the terms of the deal. Maybe Players Association is right to say, hey, we already did this. We're not coming back for a second time.
Dan Lust, find him on Twitter. Dan, I really appreciate you. At Sports Law Lust on Twitter. Dan, thank you for making time.
Always a pleasure, John.
Great stuff there. I think he's the best nationally on sports and law. We bring him on occasionally on this show. I love it. People were tweeting questions at me. My friends were texting me questions, and I was trying to get to the bottom of it. But certainly the NBA season, the Major League Baseball season, college football, and even youth sports. We've all got sort of legal angles that need to be explored. All right, the big splash is coming up. Plus, later in the show, we will take a deep dive on Oregon and Oregon State. Also, humans are trapped inside. There are at least three different animals that are thriving because we can't get outside. What are they? We'll find out. Youth sports, parents are frustrated. They are. They're frustrated. You got kids who play sports? I think, you know, some parents are frustrated because they want the sports to come back. Other parents are frustrated because they just don't know what's going on. Other parents are frustrated because they've been trapped inside the house with their children for too long. It's been too many days. Too many days. I don't blame you. You're looking for a little reprieve. And I also think why we have this discussion about youth sports that we should examine whether it is parents who are missing the youth sports more than kids. Came up on yesterday's show. I've got friends who have talked about such things with me as well. But I'm trying to get answers for kids and parents who are eager to get back to youth sports. I reached out to the governor's office, Governor Kate Brown, and it is the subject of today's Big Splash.
This is the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it. Where? Down there. Must be
the Big Splash. Brought to you by Sport Clips. Cut the wait. Download the new Sport Clips Haircuts app and check in.
Well, I've fielded a lot of questions about youth sports participation from interested parents. Oregon Governor Kate Brown has released her plan to reopen the state, but doesn't really include sports. So I reached out.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.